Accession number 19659, Reel 3.
Colonel Schroeder, Reel 3.
So, of course, when the prisoners were let out from the compound, 9 of us were sentenced to death, not necessarily from the same organization, but not from the same units, if you know what I mean. They were mostly from Lvov. We were kept behind, so suspicion ran, you know, was passed on among the Polish prisoners that we don't go anywhere without you chaps. So they went on strike. Russia didn't know what to do. The first time, prisoners on the strike. So, of course, they let us out next day, and we joined them. Of course, there is nice people everywhere. So, while we were getting ready to go, in about 2 miles to get our train, Russian lieutenant, KGB, yes, on a horseback, yes, came to us and he said, "Look, chums, please trust me once. I know you can, but please do. Don't bunch together. Try to leave the train and use your own ways to get to the Polish army. Not you who were sent to death, because you will be picked up. That I give you fair warning. And shut up, I never said anything to you at all." And of course, when we came to Kotlas, town, we just said to each other goodbye. I sided with 3 friends to go separately, and we went to Moscow. We reported to Moscow, but we were full of lies, so the Polish embassy in Moscow wouldn't let us in. And while traveling, we picked up some food from the dead bodies, because that train apparently was bombed and machine gunned from the coming out of the Leningrad then. So we had to catch our own transport, only showing our sort of document that we are released prisoners, Polish prisoners, going to join Polish army. And we are passing the Buzuluk. We saw the Polish guards with the rifles. So I said, "There must be it." We asked, and I said, "Yeah, that's right, come out." He said, "This is the Polish center. They mobilized everybody here, they admit." So, after washing and so on, and being issued with the English uniforms, we were told, 3 of us, that we are attached to officer school, infantry officer school.
Before you go any further, if I can ask you what happened to you at Vorkuta?
That's what they said in Vorkuta. When they separated us, they kept us, who were sentenced to death, behind them, wires. The other prisoners refused to go, and they went on a hunger strike.
But had you been working at
Vorkuta? No. We were just waiting there, having our food, waiting there to be allowed to go to our Polish army. That's it. But they let all the prisoners out except us. We were later released, and that lieutenant's, Russian lieutenant's, sort of catching up with us and telling us to run.
What impression of life in Russia had you got in traveling through Russia?
Misery, a month for misery. Even today, they cannot get organized their own citizens and food. 60% of food, even today, is being imported from outside to Russia. Russia, which could produce a lot of food, even to spare for others.
Can you give any examples of this misery that you saw whilst you were there? in 41?
Yes, Kolkhozes. The people were just getting a small bit of ordinary people, small bit of sugar. You know, the matchbox, half of it was given per person per week. And child as well, a bit milk, or more milk for a child. Bread, only one slice of bread daily. Tea, I mean cold tea. It was nothing but the boiled water. And that's it, that's how I traveled, on that to Polish Army. And in Polish Army, first time after a couple of years, I received hot meal, hot soup in the Polish Army. I cried. As simple as that.
What about the organization of the railways in Russia?
Chaos. Then, I'm talking about when I was there. Chaos. There were all trains like a magic, all going north or all coming south. And so a lot of people, and Jewish, Polish, Ormians, the Kazakhs, and God knows what. They were just traveling everywhere for nothing, because you couldn't buy a ticket. There was no control, and the controllers, train controllers, were afraid, really, to ask for a ticket, because Russians who didn't have were ready to kill for having that freedom. Anyway, this is the worst period of my life. That was the sort of dream, nasty dream. Even today when I talk about it, I still think maybe it was not real, maybe I was just half unconscious or something. It's something you cannot describe to you, for instance. I'm sure you just cannot realize. You believe me what I say, but you cannot realize. Whoever was there, you know, can't realize, but who wasn't. And he's being told that, he said, oh, Scottish people, no, you're joking, impossible, they're our allies, or something like that. So you just sort of shut your lips tight, didn't say a word.
Could the people in the USSR say anything against the government at that time?
No. They were simply taken to labor camps, prison, labor camps, and that's it. And they're just anything they had or something, any records or anything, disappeared. He was not in existence or she was not in existence once he got, a person got into the hands of NKVD.
So you said you were at Buzuluk as an infantry cadet?
That's right, officer school.
Were you getting much training or equipment?
Equipment, we got uniforms sent over to for Polish Army from England. We simply dressed back where we didn't want to wear even Russian, you know, part with the Russian army dresses or something. We just simply refused. Although we were colder, mind you, but and of course some armament was given to us to learn how to use it. Of course, I went then to Vrevskaya, then I was transferred to Polish Armor Officer School in the south of Russia.
Why were you transferred to the armor?
My own request, volunteer. I wanted to be armor.
Why?
Because they had tradition, Kabler tradition. And I went to the army. I become fully pledged officer waiting for a commission, aspirant, equivalent of aspirant or subaltern in the British Army. And then I was wounded as an officer. And when the casino lost my arm.
But can you tell me about how you got out of Russia to Persia, please?
In the army, as an infantry cadet officer, as a troop.
But what is the story of your getting out of Russia into
Russians didn't want to feed us anymore. That was their excuse. So, Polish government in connection with the British government, agreed to take over those troops. So, of course, we came over from Russia to Persia to be under British command.
What was the journey like to Persia?
Russians refused to feed us, and I traveled 8 days without any food or tea or anything or any bread, till I came to Persia, to Pakhlevi, to be exact.
Did you go via Krasnovodsk?
Krasnovodsk, to Krasnovodsk, and from Krasnovodsk on the boat to Pakhlevi.
What were conditions like in the boat?
Terrible. Terrible. There was no privacy, no toilets, nothing. That's the Russian way of organization. Even today, if we see something is funny or dirty or something that's organized, we say, Russian organization.
Had you had any contact in Soviet Central Asia with the Uzbeks or
yes,
other people?
Yes, I had. There is the story. When I was in the, that's going back, when I was in the concentration camp in the north of Russia, I met the Russian. His name was Bologna, and we got friendly. He was Urka. Urka, that means the Bezprizornik, that means about thief, like layabout. And he was sentenced to 20 years of imprisonment, being, by profession by the way, teacher in the school. Once he took the matches, tried to strike, you know, and matches wouldn't lie. I said, oh, bloody governments in a production. He got 20 years late. And he became that Urka in the north of Russia, Barkov sector of Yelena. So, when we were just being let out, you know, he came to me with a letter and shyly asked me, could I post it? Get somehow stamped, and could they post it to his mother and sister who are in Tashkent. As it happened, I was being transferred there from officers' school infantry to armor, to armored cavalry. And we had to travel to Tashkent. I remember that letter which I posted near Kuybyshev on some station. I said, remember the his surname? I just went to the street, I didn't remember the number on the street. I was a bit afraid because... And I asked, is there any body, lady who lost a son, who was arrested? There are Russian women all and that, and she went away. Just showing me secretly, sort of quickly frightened. I came to the door, knocked the door, the lady, beautiful lady, mother about 45 something, opened the door, and she saw me all lanky chap, you know, British uniforms, insignia of officer school, you know. Standing there, said, who are you? I said, I'm a Polish cadet officer. He says, what do you want here? I said, your name is so and so? He said, yes. I said, I've been with your son in the concentration camp. My God, come in. And of course, I had to tell them all over again. And there was a girl as well, his sister. And so I told him, he's alive. But his father is not. That's what he told me to tell you in a letter. I said, have you received the letter? He said, yes, we did. Not even open, not even checked. Must have slipped through. So I said, I'll try to see you maybe next Sunday because I am under orders. I'm waiting. I was standing with a rifle and so on. So he said, please do. But please come early in the morning. So when the Sunday came, I was in Ivrevskaya, about 20 kilometers from Tashkent. I boarded a train, goods train. I gave the 5 rubles to the driver, and he took me to Tashkent and said, "Now, get over here, get to the main station, and you are in Tashkent now." Which I did, and of course we had, I brought some beef, originally beef, Polish beef, and chocolate, and British beef, you know, the corned beef, and chocolate. When we were parting, she told me, she works for NKVD. I said, it's a good place, I came here, and I started to laugh. And she said, "Don't worry, Bavoya." She called me Russian way, Bavoya. I said, "No, don't worry about that. We'll keep our mouth sealed." So, I was just getting ready to go, I said, "You are going to Persia, by the way. I'll be quiet about it. But I would beg you, if it is possible for you, to get the Zina, that means Zofia, Zina, that girl, to Polish army as a Polish ATS, because they know they're being formed there." I said, "I don't know in a moment. I am under orders. I am officer cadet. And I could be just, you know, degradation to the private, thrown out from the school, and she would be arrested or something." It's a lot, she was thinking, she said, "Yeah, there's a lot to ask of you, but if you change your mind, take care. I would like her to go to Persia." Stupid of me, because half of ITS, Polish ATS, future ATS, were Russians, Russians. Imagine, we knew that they spoke, you know, sometimes with a funny accent. So, yes, I'm Russian, they were admitting, you know. So that's the life, Mr. Wood.
So they just joined the Polish ATS to get out of Russia?
Of Russia. Those girls who were Russian girls who were lucky.
What was Persia like after Russia?
Heaven. One word. Heaven.
Because of the food?
Miracle. Food and freedom. Sun. And the people smiling, trying to speak to you in the Russian, because they, we know. He said, "Are we Russian troops?" We said, "No, we are Polish troops. Nothing to do with the Russia." Of course, the Russians were coming up, and I said, you're English? So we said, "Yes." No. One of us said, "No." I said, "But you're wearing English uniforms." I said, "Ah, well, because we are Poles." I said, "Oh, you're siding with them, with that lot, with bourgeois." I said, "Nothing to do with bourgeois. It's only to do with the history. We were always friends from the ages."
Who said this to you?
Russian soldiers, they were asking, you know, why we are not with them, only with the English. So we told them, not in a certain words, you know, just strong words. And that's it, they left us alone.
Let's jump ahead now to the battle for Monte Cassino. What was your rank and your job and unit at that time?
Cutting story short, from Persia, I went to officer school, completed officer school, came out as a subaltern, equivalent of British. I fought in Monte Cassino, being commander of a tank. No? So, prior to this, I was there were two of us detached from the regiments, which was 4th Armored Regiment, Scorpion. We wore the scorpions here on a red patch. And I was the one with a friend, both of us, were organizing ammunition dumps. So we were about fortnight before the Battle of Monte Cassino started. So all the time, every second night, on the 39th, you had to drop or mark the dump of munition where it could be just laid down. And of course that had to be done under the heavy mortar bombing. How they knew we were always coming, I don't, probably noise. The motors going, raving. Anyway, after I came back to my unit, they said, all right, you get your old tank. So, and we were, our squadron, first squadron was put in reserve during the battle. Regiment fought here and there, as you know, it was a bloody battle. I don't need to tell you how it looked. So finally we came as a reserve. And while being in the reserve, we were trying to get organized, and I met a friend of mine, Belkevich, Mietek, Miki, and he showed me the German, captured German positions, how they look, how dirty and smelly. And the, my commander platoon, because I was subaltern, just waved to me to come quickly to him. So when I came to him, he said, now look, there is our infantry being surrounded by Germans. You jump into a tank, get in touch with their own infantry HQ and the waves, you know how it is. He gave me the left, right, north, and all this, so I found a place where it is quick on the map, and they started to shoot, because I was the nearest the edge, and I could just see where the Germans were approaching. And what I was doing, second in command of Armored Regiment came to me, Captain, he said, look, do you think you could support them lower? So really, I found out later on here in London that commanding that Polish infantry platoon was my future professor of history in the Polish University here in London. So in the meantime, officers came and said, now look, they were sort of gathering, you know, we call it a consultation. I said, we are going to be leaving this place about 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And that sort of session of officers, you know, trying to get organized, was led by a commander, a second in command. And all of a sudden we got terrific shells, you know, dropping. We thought it was mortar. No, it was the heaviest artillery, Navy artillery from Neapoli, shelling us. You know, they were just like barrels coming. So you could sink the tank into it, the hole. And of course I got one behind the tank. So of course, you know, my arm. I didn't know how I lost it. When I lost it, it was so quick, without painless, you know. Then all of a sudden I cannot get hold of my position. And I thought, yeah, all this blood was going there. So I was thrown out by my crew. When I was outside, they came with the stretchers, put me there, and about 7 or 8 officers from the owls and from the anti-tank artillery were killed or maimed. I was put quickly on the stretchers and went to the hospital. I was brought into hospital.
And so these were naval guns that were firing?
That was being told. German Navy guns, because they never had Germans any anti-tank armament. So they used the heavy guns to destroy our ability to fight, to move. They were crafty. And they were quite remarkable, those guns.
What kind of a tank was it that you were in?
Sherman. It was American Sherman.
Had you been in much fighting at Cassino before then?
Oh yes, I was every second night I was under the fire. That was enough. going to visit or respect our positions, which sappers were broadening the entrance and so on and so on, and delivery to our platoons, you know, specially organized, which kept the watch, you know, on Germans prior to battle. And the after that, I just turned around and came back to my place where was my mate, Kuba Janchowski. His name is Kuba Janchowski. He's in Argentina. So after being wounded, I was taken to hospital, the Campo Basso, and they landed in number one in Casasin, south of Italy.
And which dates were you wounded? You remember?
18 dead, quarter to four in the afternoon.
Which date?
18th of May.
1944.
At 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So after being in hospital and getting a bit patched up, we didn't have anywhere to go. No families, nothing. So I decided to go back to my own regiment, which I did. And I was, how do you call it, special officer on a small armored car, Daimler, keeping, you know, taking orders, you know, sort of like adjutants, junior adjutants, you know. And I was wounded second time, yeah.
In your mouth?
In my mouth, yeah. A very small shrapnel there. So under this sort of excuse, I was transported back to hospital, Porcento to Palagiano, second army hospital. And from there, they decided I should go. It would be better for me to go to England, getting better patched up than just temporary sort of, and do some studies, which I did.
But you later had a job looking after prisoners, German and Ukrainian prisoners?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that, please?
While I was there, you know, in the studying, completing my matriculation in the administration college, I was called up back by British Army, sent to Edinburgh Castle, where I was told to report to Eastern Command. I said, why? Why all of a sudden? What's the matter? What's happening? And there's a simple reason. There are a lot of German, especially Ukrainian troops, who were on the German side. As you know the lingo, Russian and Ukrainian, it would be helpful to have some specialists in that field. So, of course, what can you say? Yes, sir, no, sir, $3 full, you turn around and that's it. And I came back to the Eastern Command. And Eastern Command, I was transferred to the sort of transit camp of the name of that Fakenham, which, of course, I couldn't